Well, one of our favorite traditions on the week of Halloween is to have Ursula Bielski on with us, a paranormal researcher, founder of Chicago Hauntings, and I think the foremost expert on all things creepy and scary in and around Chicagoland. Ursula, how are you?
I am doing great. How are you? Happy Halloween.
Happy Halloween.
I should say Merry Halloween.
Exactly.
You say you're doing great, but I happen to know you're not feeling well. Here's the weirdest thing in the world. We've had you on nearly every Halloween or the week of Halloween for the last 5 or 6 years, and either you or Wendy is always sick that day for some weird reason.
It's true. Yeah. And I still don't know if Wendy actually exists, and Wendy doesn't know if I actually exist.
That's accurate.
We've never seen each other in person.
Well, that fits with the whole paranormal thing, doesn't it?
It does. It really does.
Excellent.
All right, Ursula, be honest. Why is there so much paranormal activity in and around Chicago? What exactly is going on there?
There are a few different reasons for this, and we always talk about this on our Chicago Hauntings tours. There are three main reasons for it. One is all of the water in Chicago. We're situated on one of the largest bodies of fresh water in the world, and we have the Chicago River, the Des Plaines River, running through Chicago. And paranormal experts always talk about the fact that water is a great conduit for paranormal activity because it's a great conduit for electrical energy. So we think that a lot of this activity is made up of electrical energy. The other thing is that there has been so much cover-up in Chicago's history of the terrible things that have happened in our past, from the mass tragedies like the Eastland disaster in 1915 that took 844 lives on the Chicago River, the Iroquois Theater fire, which happened at the now Nederlander Theater site on Randolph Street, which took 602 lives.
Jeez.
It's still the worst single building fire in American history. And of course, the gangland era, in which rival gangs killed thousands of people. It's very similar to the drug wars that go on today in Chicago, where so many people are killed every day. This was very, very similar to what was going on in the 1920s in Chicago during the beer wars, the turf wars during the Volstead Act in Chicago and around the country. So we have this really negative history, but we also have this tradition or legacy with our administrations going back generations of not marking the locations where these tragedies occurred. You know, the intent is good. You know, administrations have wanted to kind of forget the past, move forward. But when you do not mark these locations, even when you don't mark a grave of someone or the name or the date on the gravestone wears away, you can have someone coming around and causing trouble centuries after they were buried because their grave isn't marked. So when you have these locations in Chicago where hundreds of people died under horrible circumstances and there's not a plaque or a statue or anything to mark that, you know, they're going to come around and talk and cause trouble until we start to remember them. And I think that's why we have so many of the different haunted locations in Chicago, at these locations where these mass tragedies and killings are not remembered.
So that's all they want, is to be remembered. And once they feel they've gotten the respect they deserve and the remembrance, then they don't haunt anymore?
Yeah, no, you know, I think they want to be remembered, and but they also want to continue to be remembered. So we need to have, it's great in somewhere like Chicago where there's so many history tours, so many haunted tours, so many gangster tours, where people continue to talk about these things. But there's also the issue of are they resting in peace? And a big thing in Chicago, as in a lot of other big cities in the country, especially in New York City, there's the issue of the belief systems of the people that have passed away. And in Chicago, as in a lot of other big cities, a lot of the people that still haunt Chicago were Roman Catholic when they were alive. You know, we think about the big gangsters that haunt Chicago. This accounts for a lot of the hauntings in the city. Al Capone and Bugs Moran and all of their cohorts were Roman Catholic, and they believed in eternal reward or eternal damnation. And, you know, we always say, like, oh, when someone passes away, we say, oh, well, they're at peace now. They're at peace now. Those people don't change. They just lose their physical bodies, and they still have their belief systems. And I myself, and I know a lot of my colleagues, believe when people pass away, those belief systems remain. So if you think that you are going to go to an eternal reward or an eternal damnation, you might be afraid to move on at all and prefer to just stay here where you know things, you understand the situation, rather than move on and see what's in store for you.
So, Ursula, if these ghosts are Roman Catholic ghosts, they obviously have a lot of guilt, don't they?
Yeah, absolutely. Yep. I mean, that's that I'm a practicing Catholic, and it's a big deal.
Me
and
too. I need to practice better, though.
Ursula, well, our lives are ordered by the idea that we need to receive the sacraments.
Sure.
We need to the Eucharist and confession in order to be in line with what's going to happen to us. And we understand that if we pass away with sins on our soul that haven't been professed or praised and forgiven by praise through Jesus, that we are not going to be free to move on to heaven. So, you don't know. It might be that a lot of these people are confined here because of these beliefs or beliefs in their own beliefs or experiences.
In movies, they always say that the spirits exist because they had unfinished business. Something happened and they need to take care of it and finish that business. That kind of ties in with everything you've just explained, doesn't it?
Yeah, it really does, and it goes far beyond religious beliefs. So many people, I would say the majority of people that I have encountered that seem to be tied to locations that I've investigated, are very strong-willed people, totally outside of religion. Very strong-willed people that are tied to their families. Maybe they were the matriarch or the patriarch of a family. They've passed away. And they have a whole network of children with spouses and children, grandchildren, that they maybe feel that they have directed throughout their lives. Maybe they've financially directed them throughout their lives, and now they're gone. And they feel like they have to be still attached to these people, to their children and grandchildren and descendants, to guide them. There have been so many priests and administrators of churches and schools, librarians attached to their libraries, teachers attached to their schools, people attached to their institutions that they ran for decades or generations that they feel they just can't let go of because nobody can quite lead these institutions the way that they did in life. So they are still attached to them.
She is Ursula Bielski. We need to take a break. Paranormal researcher, founder of Chicago Hauntings. You can go to chicagohauntings.com. We'll take a quick break and continue. I have a really good question that I want to bring up to Ursula
as
well. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder at 720 WGN. It's Bill, it's Wendy, and we are chatting with Ursula Bielski as we're celebrating a merry Halloween, because it's snowing and it's Halloween. Ursula, you can find her at chicagohauntings.com, Chicago Hauntings Original Ghost Bus Tour. There's Ghosts of Old Chicago and Naperville Hauntings Ghost Walk as well. As I mentioned, all that information can be found at chicagohauntings.com. Here's my question for you. Moms out there really want to take care of their kids, and unfortunately I know some moms who have passed away at a young age and their kids are very troubled right now. Is there some way that we can, once we've moved on, can we help and guide and keep watch over who is left here?
There are lots of just different theories about this, but there is no doubt from my experience over the last 30 years that moms and dads and aunts and uncles and grandparents are constantly interacting with us. You may not sense them all the time as far as seeing apparitions and things like that, the things we expect. you know, we always expect to see the apparition of a loved one who has passed away or feel someone sitting on the edge of our bed and things like that. But they are always with us, and they interact with us. And we are taught that all of these people are the beautiful souls that have passed away, and they are always watching over us, and they are always interceding for us with God to help us. And so I would say the best thing for people to do with children who have had parents that have passed away, it's such a horrific situation and such a sad situation, is just to remind them that when we pass away, we just lose our physical bodies. There's nothing that really changes with us. And we continue to grow, and we continue to be with our families. And we're told by a lot of people that are mediums that are more familiar and interact with and talk to people that have passed away, that there are different levels of advancement. Just as we live our lives and we advance and we change and we grow, that same thing happens after we pass away. So actually, the sooner that someone passes away, the closer they are to us. They're just outside of our physical bodies. So, you know, really encourage people to and children to keep talking to their moms and dads. We all do that. My dad passed away 30 years ago. My mom passed away last year, and I talk to them every day. That's a really good thing to do.
It's comforting.
Yeah, it's totally comforting and totally, absolutely teach your children to do that with all of our relatives that have passed away. It's a wonderful bond that exists between us and the next world, and we should always encourage that.
Ursula, when was the last time you were genuinely scared by something you saw or heard?
Oh, yeah. This is a question I'm asked all the time, and you know, it happens all the time, being genuinely scared by phenomena. The other day, I had come home from an investigation, and this happens on a regular basis. And I had been investigating a case where a woman was waking up every morning with welts on her arms, like bruises on her arms that looked like someone had grabbed her arms. You could see like the four finger tips bruises on the forefront of her arm and the thumbprint on the back of her arm. And this had happened for weeks. And coming home from a situation like this, you often bring home some, I don't know if it's an actual active entity or if it's the residue of the energy that you've experienced, but I think it's probably the latter. I came home, and I was lying in bed, and I heard this huge crash from the kitchen. And I had, we don't have a dishwasher, so I had washed our dishes and put them on the drying rack next to the sink. And I had gone out to the kitchen, and the entire, all of the, you know, dishes that were drying had been thrust onto the floor. So that's, you know, it happens all the time.
What do you think happened there? Why did that happen, do you think?
Yeah, you know, I think that when you go into a situation where there's some forces battling each other, whether it's human entities that are there that are, you know, trying to move on, or if it's something else, non-human entities, or if you would call some kind of diabolical forces, whatever, there's a lot of energy that goes into creating phenomena, situations where you're having objects moving around, doors slamming, things like that. And I think it's only natural that you bring, and I think it's only scientific that you have some of that energy attached to you and you bring it home. And I think it's just kind of like battering around the house, you know what I mean, for hours or a couple days, depending on the intensity of the situation. It's kind of like you're kind of charged up by the situation. You bring that home. That makes sense.
It does make sense. Although I have to tell you, there are people who, you know, believe in this and people who don't. I tend to believe in it. There are some texters out there that don't believe in it, but this is a great text, and I'm just curious. Is Ursula haunted by Richard Crowe, who is the ghost hunter who has passed away?
Funny. Yeah. Richard Crowe is so funny. You know, but way back in the day when Richard Crowe had the only ghost tours in Chicago, yeah. And now there's like 30 of them or something. You know, we started the second ghost tours in Chicago. Gail Kazmierek of the Ghost Research Society did tours out on the South Side. But I guess we started the first actual ghost tours in the city of Chicago after Richard Crowe. And it was really funny because Richard Crowe and I had a good mutual friend, Wally Dvorak. And Wally used to hire Richard to do tours for him every Halloween with groups of his friends. And Richard Crowe passes away in, I think it was June of 2012.
Yeah.
And our mutual friend Wally had already scheduled a tour with Richard. And so Wally had this busload of people, like 50 people, scheduled to do this tour. So he said, "Ursula, will you do the tour for me?" I said, "Sure." So he did the tour, and every time I would take the microphone on this tour, the microphone would go out. And every time Wally would take it, the microphone would be fine. Richard Crowe, I loved him so much, and I was young. I wasn't really influenced him. I didn't really go on any of his tours, but I knew who he was, and I was...
Everyone knew who he was.
He was wonderful. Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. And I had written to him a couple of times when I was writing my first book, and I said, "You should do a ghost tour." And he said, "I don't want to do ghost tours. You should write a book." And he said, "I don't want to write a book. I don't want to write anything down." And when we started our ghost tours, we were always kind of like at odds with each other. But the last time that I was out on a ghost tour, when I ran into Richard, I looked across at him because we had been at Hull House, you know, known as the most haunted house in Chicago.
Yeah.
And I always, whenever we got somewhere where Richard's bus was there at the same time as us, I would always defer to him and we would to stay on our bus until he was done. And so we were at Hull House, and I said, "Oh, well, we're going to stay in the bus for a few minutes because Richard Crowe is here, and he's finishing up his tour." And so when he was just got everyone on his bus, and I stepped off of our bus, I looked across to him, and I smiled at him, and he smiled back at me. And it was this great moment because he was always like, "Wow. You're on my turf. You're doing stuff that I'm only supposed to be doing." And I always wondered today, you know, we have like, it was just Richard Crowe and me and Dale Kismarek's tours. There were three of us that operated at that time when Richard Crowe passed away.
You always wonder, go ahead. I'm sorry, we have to wrap up.
Yeah, I always wonder, like, what would Richard Crowe do with all of these knockoff tours? I think there's like 10 ghost walking tours and several other bus tours that operate now. And they're all based on Richard's research that he created the framework for the ghost lore of Chicago. You know, he flashed out all of these stories on his tours. And then Dale Kazmierek of the Ghost Research Society, who's done so much research over, I think, like 50 years, one of the oldest ghost research organizations in the country. And then us, who have been in operation and writing books for 30 years. And then all of these other companies now that
but
are
we don't want to worry about those. We want to worry about your ChicagoHauntings.com is where
yes.
you go.
Ursula,
thanks
so much. Happy Halloween. Hope you're feeling better.
Thank you so very
all right,
much.
Take care.
Yeah.
That's Ursula Bielski again, ChicagoHauntings.com.